Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User-Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User-Friendly 2.0. I'm your host, Bill Sickens. Gretchen, Bill, welcome to this week's show.
Hello there.
So we've got some interesting things coming up in the next segment. We're going to have a guest who is going to be talking about health coaching, like, you know, exercise and that type of a thing. But his approach is specifically for gamers. Now, I know when I'm doing a long gaming session, I eat very, very well. And, you know, it's all good and natural. My nutritionist wouldn't have a problem.
Your Somebody nose better, is growing.
Yes. No, I'm kind of like a lot of people where I have five Red Bulls and a Wurst or something, actually, literally that. So it does seem that being sedentary like that can cause some problems. But the approach that he takes is actually something that, at least in my opinion, made a lot more sense. So we'll see what he has to say. We're also going to be talking, as promised from last week, about cosplay and Harry Potter. And I know we had a few questions coming in. It seems like most of the feedback we've gotten so far supports the idea that there's nothing wrong with cosplay. So definitely going to talk about that a little bit. And then next week, we're going to be starting something new. And this is going to be something kind of cool. We're going to have it going on this year. And, you know, when they were projecting the future, 1900, they were looking at, okay, there was this whole thing that was done back then. What do you see the year 2000 being in a format of technology? And you had a number of different things, some stuff that came to fruition, like things we do with medicine, that type of thing. Some that didn't, like having radium in your fireplace to heat your house and that type of a thing. But by 2000, we were supposed to have jetpacks. Well, that didn't materialize. However, better late than never, 2024, it seems to be happening. So that's just a little teaser. We're going to talk about it next week and get some information on something that's really kind of cool. All right. What do we have in the news this week?
All right, Intel to receive $8.5 billion from CHIPS Act. So what is that?
All right, quick question. I know you love your acronyms. Do you know what CHIPS stands for?
No, unless it's California Highway Patrol or something like that.
No. And I am of the opinion that there is somebody that's hired in the government or somewhere that decides, oh, this is the acronym you want. Okay, we'll figure out something to make it work. So this is the Creating Helpful Incentives to Produce Semiconductors Act, or CHIPS. That's what it means. And the idea of this is to bring microprocessor manufacturing back into the United States. And as the headline would look, Intel has received a very nice grant for being able to do that. Now, our home area is Portland, Oregon, and Intel has a lot of their manufacturing in what up here is called Silicon Forest. And I worked for them for a little while. They have some great facilities and all of that type of thing and do manufacturing. But a lot of this is moved offshore. And as we saw during COVID, if you have supply chain disruptions, that can cause a lot of problems if all of your technology is not available without the ships getting in. So that's the reason behind this. It's, from my understanding, going to create a lot of new jobs and some things like that. So I think it is a positive. I'm just trying to wrap my mind around $8.5 billion. That's a lot. You know, I often say that's almost a coffee at Starbucks. I think this one would be a coffee and a croissant.
Oh, yeah. China's new guidelines block Intel and AMD chips in government computers.
So basically, that is exactly what the caption reads. I think this is kind of a retaliatory thing because we've been blocking some of their technology. So Intel and AMD will no longer be allowed in their government computers in China in favor of what they would consider domestic or things that are made in China. And China does have manufacturing, of course, of chips and microprocessors and all that kind of stuff. And the argument, you know, which one's better and all that kind of thing is a separate conversation. But it's just another line of where we're seeing the technology area splintering a little bit. And we're going to be investing more, as we just said, in manufacturing here, but I guess we're not going to be using them there.
EU investigates Apple, Meta, and Google owner Alphabet under new tech law.
So we talked about Apple pushing an update that didn't change too much stateside, but in Europe, what it did was open the store so that you could install applications from alternate places than just iTunes. And this went into effect on March 7th. So what would that be, about 3 weeks ago now?
Yeah.
And it looks like the big tech giants aren't real interested in cooperating. At least that is the concern. So what they're looking at now, it's actually Alphabet, Amazon, Apple, Meta, Microsoft, and ByteDance, which is TikTok. They want to make sure that there's a level playing field, or at least that's the claim with the legislation. And this is what this is about. And on the heels of this, we're also going to be seeing an update to the Chrome browser, which eliminates one kind of cookies for tracking. That's coming up here too. So that is a change that we'll see stateside. And I know from just some of the stuff we've worked with, they are starting to get some privacy laws and different things like that. California has one as an example, to where we're going to start seeing it in a case where it opens up these type of things. Now, from a standpoint of a software programmer, I do like this. I know that not everybody does, but basically what this comes down to is the idea that if you write an app and you put it on the Google Play or the iTunes Store, so the App Store on the device, and you sell things within your app or you sell the app, they keep 30% of the proceeds right off the top. So this becomes a problem, especially if you start doing well, because this becomes really expensive. Well, Apple, a little more so than Google with Android, but Apple had locked it down. You couldn't even load beta software. It's like it was a situation where you just simply cannot install software on an iPhone, iPad device unless it goes through the iTunes Store. So that's what kind of started this whole thing. And Bill, what was the game that kind of pushed this to the forefront that they refused to do it? We'll think of it later. But there was a gaming company that wanted to sell their game subscriptions that's well known, and they were kicked off of the iTunes Store. So that started this whole thing. It's gone to court. It's gone back and forth. Android has the Play Store, but it has been possible to get other markets or what they call sideloading software on an Android device, whereas you couldn't on Apple. So it'll be interesting to see where this ends up going. And the fine for this non-compliance in Europe, it can be up to 10% of the turnover of the company. So that could be big bucks or big euros in their case.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Millions of Americans caught up in Chinese hacking plot.
Yeah, and a lot of hacking news that's been coming out here recently here. But this is something that is claimed that the Chinese government absolutely denies this. That the Chinese government has backed cyber attack campaigns. The hacking operation ran for 14 years, and they are getting in and shutting this down. Now, you know, where this applies, and we've talked about some of these different things where you have stuff that comes out of this like malware, or they're stealing identity and trying to ransom it back, or hacking in to do different things. Some of the scarier stuff was the State Department finding out that foreign governments have been in our utility systems for a long time now, just kind of sitting and watching. So this type of stuff is being taken a lot more seriously. U.S. State Department announced a reward of $10 million for information on seven men that are supposed to be connected to this. The details of that can be found online. There's a lot of news about it with the specific names and all that type of stuff. But at the end of the day, I think what I would just sum this up is it is good to see us taking this a little more seriously, because this is something that could be a big problem. Let's say there was a problem with China and Taiwan, okay? And we get on the bad side of China, that now they can get in and shut off all our power or something. You know, that's the kind of thing that can happen. And that's even worse than having to pay a ransomware or something of that nature, which is also not a good thing. But it's something that is a very real problem. And I don't think it has been given the exposure that it needs to be able to, you know, get it resolved, but not even just even get a little bit of a handle on it.
New MFA bypassing phishing kit targets Microsoft 365 and Gmail accounts.
Boy, Gretchen, you're getting all the acronyms today.
Yay.
So what does MFA mean?
Master of Fine Arts.
There you go. In some circles, it's multi-factor authentication. What did you call it, Bill? Dual?
Two-factor,
that's right. Okay, then that is a correct name for it. MFA seems to be the term that is in use or in vogue right now, as it may be. And basically, what's going on here is what they're referring to Gmail accounts as your Gmail account. Microsoft 365, for anybody that doesn't use Microsoft software, is basically Word and Excel and Outlook and all that stuff packaged up where you pay a annual fee to use it, and they update it and all that kind of thing for you for that annual fee. So in any event, what they're doing is they're trying to put together this software and have quite successfully in some cases where the attacker tries to get into the victim's computer by grabbing cookies, which is software that saves certain information to be able to log you on. So basically what that does is when you go in and use multi-factor authentication and it says, do you want to save this browser as safe? That's done that way. But they figured out a way to be able to get that information, mimic that the browser is safe, and get around multi-factor authentication. And this is a six-stage process that they've been going through. Stage zero, attackers distribute malicious links via emails with embedded URLs or QR codes, tricking victims into accessing phishing pages. And, you know, this is something we've talked about in the past, whether these emails and things that sort of look like they come from a company or something legitimate when in fact they don't, you know, and clicking on the link could take you to a place where you have identity theft. It also, in certain circumstances, can actually get software onto your device, which you really, really don't want.
Yeah.
Then it goes on to a security challenge to filter out bots. This is, you know, I'm not a robot, that kind of thing. And they're able to deceive that. And then finally, it goes from there. Background scripts execute the victim's email from a URL to customize the phishing attack. URLs are quietly redirected to another part of the phishing site, moving them closer to the fake login page. And then the stage four of this stage presents a fake Microsoft login to steal credentials using WebSockets for data exfiltration. Okay, there's a lot of terms there. All it means is just don't let that happen.
Yeah.
It mimics a two-factor authentication challenge, intercepting the token or response to bypass security measures. And then finally, the victims are directed to a legitimate looking page, obscuring the phishing attack's success. And then from there, they steal your identity or get your, you know, banking information or whatever it is that they are achieving to do. So, you know, from that standpoint, these are things that you really don't want to have happen. And one of the other problems with this kind of cybercrime is that our cybersecurity experts work 8 to 10 hours a day. Theirs work 24. So it's kind of not even a level playing field. But getting through here and getting into these things to be able to, at least again, like we were saying before, bring it out to the front, I think is a good thing, because we need to be aware of how much is going on of this, which is a lot more than we hear about, to be able to start to at least get some idea of control.
Yeah. Well, hackers are threatening to publish a huge cache of NHS data.
Yeah, so it's not even just here in the United States. This is a worldwide problem. The NHS is the National Health Service. This is United Kingdom. And they have claimed to have been able to get a hold of a lot, I believe is 3 terabyte or something like that is what they're considering, a lot of private health information in the UK. And if they don't pay a whole bunch of money, then they're going to release it to the internet. So this would be health records, you know, that kind of thing. And you obviously don't want your health records out there. So, you know, again, from that standpoint, all of this is a problem. It's a very real thing. And it's something that they're going to try to extort. They're going to try to do other things. And again, I look at it from one standpoint. If it's something to where they're stealing information, identity theft, versus some of the more scary stuff where they could shut down your utilities, you know, that's where this gets really, really bad.
Yeah. All right. Kaufman County issues disaster declaration over total eclipse traffic worries.
Yeah, you know, I saw this on the list and just had to include it in here because it's like, okay, I mean, I guess they're going to have traffic problems, but I don't know if it's a national or a disaster declaration worthy. So a solar eclipse will occur over North Texas for several hours on April 8th. Coming right up. It'll begin at 12:23 p.m. and end at 3:02 p.m. local time.
So everybody,
and what they're concerned about
there
is this is going to generate so much traffic then it's a natural, it's a disaster akin to a hurricane or something, right?
Yeah.
So. At this point, they need to tell their kids to get out the lemonade stands and the solar eclipse goggle stands, you know, make money off.
Oh, yeah, I see. I'm right there with you, you know. And you know, one serious note on that is if you are going to view the eclipse, make sure you get proper eye protection, because exactly. Even though it's blocked out, it can still really damage your eyes, and you just don't want that. And the stuff to be able to do that is very inexpensive. It's not like it's you have to buy some massive thing. Usually a cardboard thing that looks almost like 3D glasses.
Yeah, you
can
buy on
Amazon. It'll allow you to do it safely. But, yeah. You know, this is actually true for the moon, too, in certain situations. When you have an eclipse, they recommend having some protection. Now, obviously, you can go out and look at the moon. That'll be okay. But when you have weird things going on, like an eclipse, I suppose that that's when you would want to think about this. But you would never look at the sun with the naked eye anyway. Uh-uh. At least I would.
No.
In any event, I missed the eclipse that we had a few years ago. We were still down in Reno at the time, and we didn't get to see the full eclipse like they did up here in Oregon. So I'm looking forward to that happening at some point. But yeah, if you're going to get out there, enjoy it. And let us know what you think of it, because it's, you know, I don't know, astronomy is kind of fun, and I get a lot of questions about this. So this is an event that you don't get to see too often.
Yeah.
All right. So to move away from hacking and disasters a little bit, you know, we always get questions in about games, and it's a hard thing to answer right now because, you know, off the top of my head, there isn't like a big one. But Bill, you were talking about something called Helldivers 2 that seems to have been a little bit of a sleeper, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the original one had kind of a cult following, but the new one came out about a month ago.
What's
and.
It about?
You know Starship Troopers?
Vaguely.
Yeah.
Think of that as a video game, but you're also fighting against robots, too, on some of the planets.
Oh.
So
actually, that kind of sounds interesting.
It could be fun.
It's very funny. There's a lot of parody in it, like Starship Troopers had. But you are a Helldiver, which is a well-trained, quote-unquote, military person. And you drop in on these planets, and you're teams of four, usually. And you do objectives like blow up a science facility, or blow up hives of the bug aliens, or destroy a tank factory of the automatons.
Yeah.
And you
know, it's interesting, because I hadn't even heard of this before you mentioned
it.
So.
Oh, yeah. No, it really did come in. It's on PlayStation exclusively, plus PC.
Okay.
It does have cross-platform play, so you can play with your PC friends or your PlayStation friends. Sadly, it's not on Xbox, so they're kind of out, but that's the thing about exclusivity in these games. But it came to... It slipped under my radar quite a bit, because it was an indie developer. When it launched, and it was backed by Sony, they didn't have enough server space for everybody. So there were problems with getting into the servers and playing the game. So it really kind of had a little bit of a hiccup there at the beginning, but now they've seemed to iron that out. And the fun part about it is it's got a sort of a game master. One of the CEOs that plays of the company goes in and sets up like situations of, okay, well, they're taking this planet from us. We need to do this. And, or you need to defend these four planets or else they're going to be taken. Or we're setting up some kind of thing on this planet. So everybody has to go there and do that. And it actually, what you do has an effect on what happens on that planet. I mean, it might be a 10,000th of a percentage, but you know, when you're talking 50,000 players on one planet alone, or like back when it was like 150,000 on some of them. It's, you see those numbers and you realize, you know, you're just a small group amongst, you know, thousands. It really kind of brings that whole thing to it. And it's got a lot of humor. It's one of those games where you're actually expected to die a number of times in each mission.
Okay.
And there's more to back it up that the next guy in line gets your ship and your stuff. So they drop in right behind you. and it really just came out of nowhere. It is a great third-person shooter. That was first-person parts to it. They're constantly updating it. We just got mechs, the giant mech suit, so we can walk around in. They're going to be coming out with, they just came out with new flying insects that are just absolutely horrible to fight against. But it's such a living thing right now that it is something to get on if you're into first-person shooters and third-person shooters and just want something to drop in on with your friends or with random people. It doesn't really matter. It's just kind of a very interesting game, and it's got 9 difficulties, starting at trivial and ending with Helldiver, and it's definitely changes how you play the game. I still like running around in the middle difficulties just because, you know, don't want it too hard, don't want it too tough, but don't want it too easy either.
Right. Now that makes sense. Right, Helldiver's too. Well, on my news, I was about to brag that I finished Cyberpunk 2077, and then you told me there's 5 other endings. But hey, you know, at least I got through one of them, and V actually didn't die. So, you know, there you are. I'm not going to spoil this, I don't think, for anybody that hasn't gotten quite to that point yet, but I was all ready to have a life again, and now I need to find 4 other endings. So, well, hey, you know.
Are you getting Phantom Liberty with it, or...
And there's a couple of different things dealing. Anyway, I think there's a little more to go into than the time we have, but yeah. Oh my goodness. I think Cyberpunk is probably one of the most violent games that I've really played through. I know there's more, but it, definitely has that aspect, but it's been a lot of fun too. It's one that's kept my attention and was well worth waiting for them to, you know, fix it in the beginning. It's rock solid as far as the software goes now. So, yeah.
They've definitely fixed it since the start launch.
Yep. And, you know, so some things do come all around. So, you know, I think we're probably going in a direction of cybernetics, and just let's hope that it doesn't go quite that way and that stays in a game. Because you never know what the future will hold. Now, Gretchen, you don't play a lot of games, but I know you like Train Station on your tablet.
Yeah, it's kind of cute.
So, you know, so there's a lot of different things out there, and some games that don't take quite as much time as others. But hey,
I think I've been playing Simpsons for like 10 years.
Yeah, Simpsons is one
Jeremy
that's been around
got
for
me
a long
started
time.
On it, and it's like I'm still, you know, messing around with it, and it's. I think I'll be sad when it finally doesn't work anymore, you know? I mean, they're going to eventually, you know.
I've been playing Warframe for almost that long. I got something like 5,000 hours in that game.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it happens. All right. Well, we don't have 5,000 hours here, so we are going to take a break. We'll be right back. Have you seen him? He's from the future. He's got a really big computer. And he uses it, uses it. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Check out our past episodes at our website, userfriendly.show. That is your one-stop shop for everything about us, our articles, our shows, our back episodes, and a number of the other things we do, userfriendly.show. You can also submit your questions and your comments. I know a lot of you do. Keep them coming in. We love to hear from you, and it's out there. Check it out. All right, so in the last segment, we were talking about video games and about 5,000 hours of playtime. And I think I probably have something like that into maybe not 5,000 hours. Cyberpunk was a long one, though, to get from point A to point B. And, you know, just with some of these other things. And then, you know, tabletop gaming, which is something we all do, which those are usually long segments where you're sitting and rolling dice and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, somebody said this might be sedentary. I don't know if that's true or not, you know, sitting 12 hours in a row is, that's good exercise, right? So, as the sarcasm sign comes out, it is actually an issue. And a lot of gamers are dealing with this type of thing because, you know, you couple that, like I'm a programmer, so my job is not real. There's not a lot of exercise there either. And all of a sudden you find that, you know, this could affect your health. So on that end, our guest today is going to be discussing this a little bit. And he has come up with a way to be able to stay healthy that is actually specifically for those of us that like to game and related things. And something that isn't going to involve you having to go to the, you know, gym or I remember a trainer that I worked with once was, you just got to do it. Well, yeah, that's motivating, you know, and that doesn't really help. Or come up with some ridiculous diet that if I tried to stay on that diet, I would be in the hospital because I'd go into hypoglycemic shock. You know, these, which are all things that experience, but it makes it difficult because if you do want to watch your health, watch your weight, that type of thing, but you're working a lot and a lot of us do where you're sitting and, you know, not really being able to get the exercise you should, this can become a problem. So to that end, there are some solutions. And this is one that actually, in my opinion, I think looks pretty good. Company's name is Phoenix Performance Coaching. And with no further ado, let's go to the interview. Joining me now, Jordan Yaklin with Phoenix Performance Coaching. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Yeah, so I run an online health and lifestyle coaching business primarily for gamers, mostly kind of tabletop gamers. And my tagline is I empower gamers to reclaim their health, lose weight, and build confidence so they can finally become the main character of their life that they're supposed to be.
I love it. I love it. But you wouldn't be implying that sitting around for 12 hours every week doing a tabletop game is bad for your health somehow.
No, I would say there's definitely a place for it. But a lot of times we see, you know, you work a sedentary job and all your hobbies are sedentary. And so there's very little movement to go like at all. And so what we try to do is find a healthy balance between getting up, getting moving and improving your health while also enjoying the hobbies that you love. And a lot of times we see that those hobbies like Dungeons and Dragons, video games, those are actually enhanced a little bit because you're feeling better and healthier overall, and you're able to enjoy those hobbies rather than just use them as a mental and emotional escape from reality.
No, actually, that sounds amazing. And, you know, I kind of asked that question a little bit tongue in cheek because I know when we game, and I'm a gamer myself avidly, we don't tend to move or eat right or anything else during those times. So it makes sense. What gave you the idea to focus on this area? You know, as a performance coach, there's a lot of different directions you could have gone, but gamer seems to be a very niche area, which is what intrigued me about it. So tell us a little bit about how this came to be.
Yeah. Great question. So I have always been a nerd to some extent. I got my first Game Boy when I was like 3, the old original Fat Boy, and I was pretty much hooked ever since. I got Pokemon Yellow with a Game Boy Color, a green Game Boy Color for like my 4th or 5th birthday. And that just spiraled me down the Pokemon rabbit hole, which I'm still currently in. And I specifically remember the first time I watched Lord of the Rings. I watched Fellowship and then Two Towers back to back. And that, to not over exaggerate, changed my life. And so that kind of followed me down the path of like fantasy and got me into Magic the Gathering, Dungeons and Dragons, and all that. And so I have a deep passion for just the fantasy genre, but I really love tabletop games because you can really just express all of your creative energy and into one outlet. And so if you want to paint, you can paint minis. If you want to write, you can write story, etc. And so I really like that aspect about tabletop RPGs. And then academically, I went down the route of exercise science, health fitness. I got a bachelor's in exercise science and a master's in exercise physiology. And so my career was more towards the health side of things, more like personal training, strength conditioning. And I guess to kind of give you the TLDR a little bit, I graduated on Star Wars Day of 2019, so May the 4th, 2019. And, you know, less than a year later, the entire world shut down. And so when I graduated, my goal was to be a high school strength conditioning coach where I can teach young athletes the proper fundamentals and foundation so that way they can have a strong foundation to reach their, you know, peak potential or get the most out of their sports performance so they can be the best version of themselves possible. The pandemic said otherwise. And so the pandemic obviously closed a lot of doors from there. and turned me towards online coaching. And I quite honestly haven't looked back. And so how I blended the two, I quite literally was, you can't see, but just off screen, I have a bookshelf of Dungeons and Dragons manuals. And then I have fantasy novels and then two shelves of boring health and fitness books. And it was next to my bed one night where we previously lived. And I'm staring at it. I'm like, how can I blend these two passions of mine? And I was like, why don't I just appeal to tabletop gamers? And so that was the inception of Phoenix Performance Coaching. That was a couple of years ago, but then I really kicked it off about a year ago.
Now, I know your website talks about a 12-week Healthy Hero campaign is what you call it. How does a client work with you and what does that look like?
Yeah, it's a good question. So a lot of what we do is very unique and customized to each individual client. And so we will have our first call. I call it a session zero, where we really dive into what they currently do as far as movement and nutrition. And we start there. And then we build up from there. So I don't just say, hey, this is a cookie cutter workout program and meal plan. Follow this. And if you don't, then you just don't want it enough or whatever cliche you want to hear. And so we work with where they are. And a lot of times working with, like we spoke about, sedentary individuals, they'll have either lack of time or lack of confidence to go to the gym. And so we will start with just some bodyweight workouts at home. And you can get a whole lot done with just that. I like to say if you either have the space of a yoga mat or one square on a D&D map, then you can get a whole lot done. And a lot of times, you know, you're standing up right off your gaming chair, right behind your desk chair, and you can get a whole lot done within like 10 to 15, even 20 minutes. And we'll do that a couple times a week. And then nutrition is where a lot of people think, oh, I'll just give you a meal plan. That's not the case at all. There's a large spectrum of what we can do. Anything from, you know, tracking calories, macros, and all that to more intuitive style eating where you're just focusing on getting certain number of servings of vegetables and certain number of proteins in. And most clients will fall within that. I would say they shy more towards tracking calories and maybe having a protein goal. And so there's a lot of flexibility and a lot of freedom within that to be able to see progress. And we, like I said, we start with where you are and then we slowly, incrementally build up. I made a post last week about how, you know, a first level wizard can't cast fireball. And so we start with, you know, where they are now and then build up so that way they can level up. So that way they can get, you know, that third level spell. And that's how I approach coaching.
I love that analogy. Actually that really kind of makes sense. So how does somebody engage you? Obviously your website, but go ahead and tell us how people would contact you and what you would recommend they do.
Yeah. So the best place to contact me would be my Instagram. And that is at phoenix.performance.coaching. That's pretty much my primary, maybe secondary landing page next to my website. And my website is the link to the Instagram, but also there's an email. You can email me there. If you DM me or email me, you'll be contacting me directly. And so I'll be responding to that fairly quickly. But most of my content is geared towards Instagram, my reels and all that. And so I try to keep that, try to post multiple times a week, try to educate, provide value. So that way you can get little tidbits. And then we also have a Discord server called the Phoenix Nest, where I try to just have a nice community of like-minded gamers who are trying to improve their health. And I throw in a lot of different resources like workouts. There are some templated meal plans to give ideas. I have a couple of eBooks in there and just try to provide a nice little hub for somebody who might not know where to get started. They can dive in there, then they have a supportive community around them already.
Okay, that sounds amazing. So the next question I'm going to ask you is going to be pretty broad. If there's anything else you want to tell us, and maybe if you want, throw in a success story or, you know, just some of the kind of on the ground experiences you've seen with this.
Yeah. So just in general, like a nice success story that I've seen.
That would do it.
Yeah, sure. So I want to talk about one of my clients. We'll call her Patty. She is a unique client because I primarily work with males, but she reached out to me through Discord actually. And so she saw the way I interact with the members of the server and she's like, all right, this guy has got it, hopefully. And so she is trying to lose weight. Her goal is she wants to be able to be a mother. And so I think that's a very deep rooted goal. And I like that goal. And she's absolutely crushing it. We've been working together like right around that 12 week mark. And she's lost like right around 25, 26 pounds in 3 months, which is very exceptional for especially a woman client. They tend
that's
to lose
amazing,
weight a little
bit smaller. Actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's absolutely crushing it. She's got her movement goals that she's hitting. She's tracking her calories. All we're focusing on is being in a mild caloric deficit. She's getting roughly 45 minutes of movement in each day. And that could be just going for a walk. It could be doing some stretching. She has a desk cycle ergometer, so like a desk bike. And so it's nothing crazy. We have like a 15 minute shoulder upper body workout that she can do with some light weights. So nothing intense, nothing crazy. And she is just borderline melting away, but at a healthy rate. And I say all this and she keeps telling me she's not doing enough. She's not successful. And I'm like, you're traveling down like a borderline linear path, which is borderline unheard of, right? A lot of times you have your ups and downs, which is all part of the process. But she'll message me saying, I turn towards food as an emotional outlet. And then I look and she's at her caloric goal. I'm like, yes, we don't want to eat our emotions, right? That's why a lot of people tend to gain weight, emotional eaters. But she was able to identify, I'm in an emotional state. I want to turn towards food. I'm going to section off a larger portion of my calories for dinner so I can go to this restaurant that I enjoy. I'm going to eat half of my entree and put half of it away for tomorrow. And so that way I can stay within my caloric budget. And so she had like five victories within that one meal. And then she's only focusing on the one thing that she felt like she went wrong, which was turning towards food for emotions. And I'm like, look, you have all these victories and you're only focusing on the one thing that you think you could fix. That's what I call a scarcity mindset, where you're only focusing on the negative or what's wrong. And so her and I, obviously we're focusing on weight loss, but a big part of it is we're focusing on the mindset shift to where we focus on what I call the abundance mindset, where you focus on, you know, the five things that went right rather than the one thing that's potentially going wrong. And that mindset shift, although the weight loss is a big goal and a big victory, that mindset shift is what we're seeing a big change overall. And it's been good, been nice.
No, that sounds amazing. It's so important. You're kind of talking on the confidence side of things, I think, a little bit there. And it, they do go very much hand in hand. So, well, Jordan, thank you so much. I have a feeling, because this is a very unique interview, that we are going to get a lot of listener questions. So I'd like to just throw this out here. Maybe in a few months we could have you back and comment on just what some of the people send in. And as far as your contact information, I know you already gave it. We're going to get it out in our social media, or check it out on our website at userfriendly.show. All the links will be there. So if you're driving right now, don't crash trying to write it down. We're going to have another way for you to get it. Jordan, thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem at all. I'm glad to be here, and I'll definitely be happy to come back.
You know, I might even look into checking that out. I mean, when we did the interview, which we recorded a little bit earlier, it seemed like this kind of a approach could be very beneficial. So I'll let you know what comes of it. Awesome. Last week, we were talking about an article that came out regarding Harry Potter. And the actress, I'm hoping I'm saying this right,
Miriam,
thank you. Okay. I got the last name sort of close. And I apologize if I mispronounced that too. But anyway, she made a comment that adult fans should grow up. And, you know, we had talked about this, that we considered this to maybe be a little bit offensive. And the listener feedback we've gotten since last week would seem that you agree with that. And in all reality, I don't know, I've just been thinking about that since I first heard about it. And now the whole idea of cosplaying and that kind of thing is a lot more beneficial than other things you could be doing, because it's, you know, you're usually up and physical and having fun with it. And I don't know, I actually think, in my opinion, that comment is very rude, and I don't think she should have said it. What do you guys think?
I almost think she was going broader than just cosplay. It almost seemed like, from what I read, it's like we need to take the books and the movies and the toys and the cosplay and the games, because there's a lot of Harry Potter stuff out there, and
yes,
put
there
it all in a box and send it off to somebody's kids. And what gets me is that the Star Trek fans from many, you know, my generation and probably the boomers were told the same thing, you know, that liking this stuff was immature. But the thing is a lot of friendships were made by going to comic cons and dressing up in costumes and sharing love for science fiction and fantasy, talking about the stories that are involved. Friendships were made.
Yeah.
Not just that, but those who left, you know, enjoyed the hobby and stuff, they're the ones who ended up making the technology of today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just going back to the cosplayers alone, does Miriam Margulies believe that, you know, costume designers just come out of the woodwork?
Yeah. Because you've got to have that creativity spark at when you're young and then trying things out. You know, how do you build this? It makes people think of all ages. You know, how do I construct this? How do I make it look real?
And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of focus on certain costumes with electronics and things like that, too. It's not, you know, so you're doing a lot of different things, and it makes you think about things and focus on things that you wouldn't normally. But really, at the end of the day, the more I thought about that, and I started ramping myself up a little bit, because it's like, there is nothing wrong with enjoying fandom. There really isn't. Yeah. And that comment from her makes it almost sound like, well, you know, thank you for supporting us. We've made billions of dollars off of you, but now grow up. I mean, that's kind of how I heard it.
Yeah.
And I think that's very selfish, to be honest.
I agree.
From a standpoint, and we see it's actually very healthy to have interactions in different things, but we see it across the spectrum. I'm not a huge sports fan, but many people are. And a lot of times they'll wear their jerseys from their major team. I made that comment last week, or they'll get involved with
face paint.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, it allows you to have an outlet that is something other than work or whatever. And like you say, Gretchen, you meet people. In fact, that's how we met, and Jeremy too, was at a Star Trek, originally a Star Trek convention, and then a Renaissance Guild. So, you know, which is also a form
of
cosplay.
Fencing.
Yeah, and fencing, you know?
Yeah.
So what, we grow up, we can't do fencing either. Okay, well, you know, let's grow up and just not have sports. Just everything should just be about work and home. You know?
Not
in the slightest. And I don't know, it almost got to a point with me that I like Harry Potter, but I'm not sure that if they let this stand that I'm going to, you know, because we have a Harry Potter cosplay, maybe I should grow up in that front and just get rid of the Harry Potter books.
Well, just don't dress up like Professor Sprout.
Yeah.
You know, she is.
But anyway, but no, I think there is, you know, from that standpoint, I know myself, I've had a very positive time with it. And I've gone through some times in my lives where I've been having to, in my life, where I've had to deal with, you know, sad things or depressing things or stressful things. And having this outlet has been very, very healthy. And, you know, being able to, okay, so I've got to do this, whatever, for the next 2 weeks, but we have a Comic-Con coming up, or we have a presentation coming up, whatever the case may be, is something to look forward to and something to be able to think about that is different than day-to-day stuff. And, you know, a lot of people collect different things and you know, have fun with that. I know Jeremy did.
There's the action figures. There's artwork. There's a lot of, you know, along the side artists who make beautiful posters and sculptures and toys, you know, like, you know, I've seen crocheted dolls and things of some various fandom characters. There's a lot of creativity that comes out of this. And I think to push it aside as being childish is just, she's really out of touch.
Yeah,
she really is.
I agree too. So, you know what? Maybe she did grow up. I don't know. But if that's what
she was ever
means,
in,
I don't want to go there. I just don't. And, you know, so what? You lose all of your fun, wonder, and love of life. No, I don't think so.
So Bill, you have Molly, who has children. Don't they love doing cosplay and enjoying, fandom things as well?
Oh yeah. Our eldest daughter is very heavily into cosplay. And she does it just as part of her, it's a hobby and something she really enjoys. In fact, we just went out to Michael's, which is, for those that don't have them, it's a hobby store. So she could buy beads and paint and stuff to complete one that she just did based on something she's been watching on YouTube. But
so do you think this has been a healthy experience for her?
Without a question. She's learned a lot of things. In fact, I had to teach her how to sew using a machine and various other things that are skills that, translate to so many other walks and aspects of life. I know my costume cosplay experience taught me a lot of stuff. And, I learned 3D printing for it. I expanded a lot of things that I never had tried before and was able to use a lot of the talents that I had in art.
Exactly.
Create something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've always been of the opinion that art and the creative process and all of that is a very, very important part of life. And it's one that, some societies, the Soviet Russia, tried to take it away. That didn't work out too well. And when you see these type of things, it is something that adds to what we are and what we all do. And the creative process is also required for being able to write things like Harry Potter. You have to have that idea because you're sitting down and doing all this stuff. So doing these things where you get to have a little bit of fun with it is a joy, and it's something that I continue to look forward to doing. But yeah, I wanted to comment on this a little bit because it just seems so off the rails to make a comment like that, especially again from somebody that's made her money from these people that she says needs to grow up. I mean, come on. It's So anyway, speaking of such things, we do have a couple of Comic Cons coming up this year. I know we haven't been too focused on that at the beginning of the year, but I think we're going to be at Rose City and we're going to try to get back to Silver State or
Silver Age, the one in Reno.
That was a lot of fun last year. And I see they're going 2 days this year. And that's around 4th of July weekend. Rose City's, I think, at the end of August. Anyway, we'll get them up on our calendar and do that as a part of things again. But yeah, so I don't know. After all of that, I think I'm going to go out and make a costume as soon as we're done recording. Just to, cosplay is something that is, the other part of it is it's a very family oriented activity. So, you have a thing here that's your kids can be involved, like Bill, what you were saying and all of that. So again, at the end of the day, I think enjoy it. Have fun, whatever your fandom is. It's just something that that we should all do. All right. Anyway, this is User-Friendly 2.0. Until next week, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User-Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2013 to 2024 by User-Friendly Media Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. Opinions expressed on the show are those of the hosts and guests and not this radio station. Please check out userfriendly.show for airtimes and podcasts.